I'm going to do something I don't normally do in my welcome, and that is kind of set up where I'm going today, and maybe even just kind of sum up my life and my career. T.S. Eliot, of whom I'm overly fond of quoting, wrote, "In my beginning is my end. In succession, houses rise and fall, crumble, are extended, are removed, destroyed, and restored. What we call the beginning is often the end, and to make an end is to make a beginning. The end is the place that we start from. And we shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all of our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time." T.S. Eliot, who corresponded with Groucho Marx, who said, "Hello, I must be going. I cannot stay. I came to say I must be going. I'm glad I came, but just the same, I must be going." Last week, the misleading title of my sermon was my first sermon, when I talked about the first address that I delivered to what turned out to be my first congregation, Star King Unitarian Church in Hayward, California, and how it really wasn't a sermon. It was a really nice cultural anthropology lecture, had a good beginning, pretty good middle, and it kind of fell off a little bit, but it was not sermonic, it was a lecture. People laughed in the right places, they were entertained, they may have learned something, but something was missing, or rather something was present that should have been missing. My real first sermon, I did not feel confident about. It was not a well-made lecture with a thesis, an antithesis, a synthesis, an analysis of everything wrapped up in a neat ribbon tied and handed to the congregation, my wisdom to their ignorance. That's not a really healthy attitude. And I learned that when I came in to do a sermon that I had very little confidence in. The topic of the sermon was on civil disobedience, and it was really clear to me that there are times when we need to be civilly disobedient. There are times when we have to put the law on trial and say, no, maybe this was passed by some set of elected officials, morons, and maybe it was even adjudicated, but that doesn't mean that it's right. Now, this is a problem, because if I say I can determine which laws to follow and which laws not to follow, what are the rules? Even with Kant's categorical imperative to act as if the maxim of my actions should be universalized into a general principle, even after explaining that and saying, you know, the reason I'm doing this is a good one, and if you had those kinds of reasons, I'd want you to do it too. I understood that decent and smart and indecent and dumb people might have very good consciences about the laws that they chose to follow or to break. And I still didn't have a sense of what the rules are. How do I determine that it's okay for me to break rules and not okay for you? Because I'm right and you're wrong? That seems like almost everyone's answer, but it's not very good. So I wasn't comfortable. I had what to me was a self-evident conclusion. We have to do it sometimes, and we can't do it all the time, and how can we tell the difference? Ended up talking about how I thought the most important part was that we subjected ourselves to the law, that our first non-negotiable demand was not amnesty, but to be arrested, to be put in front of a judge and jury, and to try the law. This is where I became, because I wrote that sermon and later published the argument, immune from jury service, because I essentially have written and published and spoken about jury nullification, saying for certain things you don't follow this law, you follow something. But as a Unitarian Universalist, can I say higher law? I'm not sure I can, but I try. So I came in really feeling philosophically scattered, without that neat package, the answer, the resolution. I'd only laid out the questions and modeled what I thought was good conscience in struggling with it. So feeling a little shaky, afterwards I was standing at the door to the coffee room as people came by, and it was my most popular sermon of any sermon I gave at Star King Church in Hayward, California. And I sat down and wondered why, and I came to the conclusion it is because I'm not responsible for the answers. I'm responsible for the questions. I'm responsible for wrestling in good conscience with great and important issues, but I don't have to pin them. I don't have to solve them. Sometimes my wrestling leads to failure and incoherence and inconsistency, and I don't stick the landing. And that's okay, because the important issues are important because they're complex, because our moral universe is not painted in a Manichaean all black, all white, no nuance, you either follow the rules or you break it. We are in a relationship with our world, with each other, with our sense of the truth, with evolving senses of our standards of decency, of law, of what our social contract is and what our responsibilities to each other are. And I have to tell you that it was a tremendous relief for me to figure out that I did not have to appear in front of a group of 100 or so really bright and educated and opinionated and argumentative Unitarian Universalists and have answers. I just had to model the struggle in a sensible and informed, if not always correct, way. I tell people that I feel perfectly free to be a fool, but not an ignorant fool. I have a responsibility to get good information, but I don't have a responsibility for being right all the time. So I can be up here and struggle, and I can be up here and bomb and crash. Aside from Bob Ross, who was a very, very dear friend, I had a mentor, the late Reverend Brandy Lovelace, who, after I had preached, I thought a particularly good sermon, said, "That was really good. Are they all like that?" And before I could answer, he said, "I hope not." He said it because if you are consistent, you are mediocre. You will never get good unless you take chances, unless you stretch, unless you have no fear of going out on some limbs and occasionally just getting it wrong. One of my favorite moments in my entire career is I preached a sermon and in Studio City, and this is when there were famines and hunger going on in India, and the question was, what do we do? And if you send food, are you just raising the mortality rate because people are living longer to have more children, and you're bringing death and not life into the world? And I did this sermon way from my head. And Ethel Helenthal, who was sitting about where Corliss is sitting now at the talk back, just said, "But John, I don't understand. If there are hungry people today and you have food today, why wouldn't it be the right thing to feed them today?" I picked up my 7 pages of handwritten manuscript, tore them into pieces, sprinkled them in the front, and said, listen to her, not to me. That's the kind of freedom that working with Unitarian Universalist congregations gave me, and a kind of confidence that I have to be able to struggle in good faith and to fall. And I hope to give others the courage to speak, to think, to try things out, and occasionally to say, oh, well, never mind, I was wrong. It's very hard for adults to say, never mind, I was wrong. But one of the great gifts of being a clergyman is you get practice. Also one of the great gifts of being married. You get practice. Hello, I'm wrong. What was the question? The question was, is my back up to sleeping on the couch? I'm really sorry I was so wrong, so tragically wrong. What was the subject again? But to have some sense of we can try things on and back off from them. We don't have a responsibility, either as clergy or as laity, to be right, to have the answers. It's not a responsibility that we have for our society, for each other, for our children. Our responsibility is to be there, to be present, to be good company, to be good listeners more than good answerers who are thinking of our answer while someone else is doing the talking. The first road sermon, and every clergy person has a road sermon, that is one that you've done, you've tested, you know that it works, and you can take it on the road and get paid as if it were a brand new sermon, because you know that. My first good road sermon I did here as my first sermon to this group, and it was called Out of the Chaos. And it was on exactly this point. On order and chaos, on success and failure. We look at this big, beautiful, wounded, sometimes broken world, and in Judaism, it is a blessing because it gives you a reason to get up in the morning and engage the world and fix it, heal it, make it better. In Hinduism, there's a goddess Kali, who is the goddess of destruction. And the understanding is that if you don't have the raw material of chaos, you don't have the raw material to build something of worth. And when you build something of worth and you try to freeze it and make it forever, it will turn to powder. We're better off, in a sense, making houses of cards and understanding that we have an ongoing relationship with the creative process. St. Augustine wrote about the order and the chaos, about how in the beginning God tries to order the chaos, but the chaos doesn't stay ordered. We're always engaged in it. When society is too chaotic, the pendulum of politics swings and we want order. When announcements of the congregation get to be longer than the sermons, we say, we want order, and we cut them all off. When people are cut off from saying important things, then we start to swing back towards a sense of trust and freedom. The job is never done. Authoritarian societies are unstable because they're trying so hard to be stable. They become brittle. Chaotic societies need to be ordered. We're always involved in this. And the question that I will not have an answer for in this talk either is, how do we engage this world? This world of creation and destruction, this world that needs our input in a way that contains both our enthusiasm and engagement, as well as some anger. How do we not feel a sense of rage at the opposition and see the humanity in others with whom we are battling on what we may consider to be important social, moral, and ethical issues? That is, to me, the great issue before every one of us. We need to engage the world. We need not accept the status quo. We need to take the unfinished work of creation seriously, but without the rage that dehumanizes the people for whom at this moment are our opposition. It's hard. It's hard to do. It's hard to remember. But those things that we do that are important are hard to do. They are hard to remember. Sometimes, looking back in the 45 years I've been doing this, I look at issues that have not gone away, where we do not seem to have made progress. Other issues I look at and they went away, and now they're coming back aggressively, and we have to re-engage them again and again and again. And I give thanks for that opportunity. I have always, from my beginning, believed in how important it is for all of us to feel called to change the world, but with a gentleness and generosity of spirit. I didn't read you my first sermon that wasn't a sermon, but I am going to close by reading you my first benediction. Before I was asked to do a sermon, I was asked to close my predecessor's, I didn't know it was going to be my predecessor, but the sitting minister at Star King Hayward, he invited me to do a benediction. And so I'm going to do that rare thing for me and read to you, because I don't want to misquote this guy. This is me. A benediction delivered by John Dobra, Star King UU Church of Hayward, 1969, UU Congregation in Fullerton, June 2014. The same words. In my beginning is my end, is my beginning. This here, I now confess to you, is my one real sermon. Everybody, every clergy person has one sermon. Schuller's sermon is, hang in there, it's going to get better. Think positively, it's going to be cool. Everybody has a core message that we dress up, we change. We may change the potatoes to the rice to the couscous, but the gravy is that one sermon. Here in my first benediction, and my last, is my one sermon. In a world where human beings die of starvation and farmers are paid not to produce, do not adjust. In a world where the annual budget for the Peace Corps is less than 1 hour of one day for the War Corps, do not adjust. In a world where civil rights, voting rights, human rights are restricted by color or religion, do not adjust. In a world where pollution poisons us and we equate smoke with progress, do not adjust. In a world where women are kept out of the corridors of power and men of mediocre accomplishment reign, do not adjust. In a world where hunger and homelessness haunt our cities while a few live with conspicuous consumption, do not adjust. Do not adjust or become reconciled and comfortable with the status quo. We can do better. Change not yourselves, but our reality, our world, with loving action from generous hearts and gentle hands. You can, we can make a difference.